Cinderella, adapted from Charles Perrault, The Little Glass Slipper. Long ago, there lived a very rich gentleman whose beloved wife died quite suddenly, leaving in his care a young daughter, who in gentleness of disposition and beauty of face was the exact likeness of her mother. Both father and daughter mourned very deeply over their loss, and for a long time lived quietly together. Then the father, thinking that his little girl needed more attention and care than he was able to give her, married a beautiful widow, to whom he had become very much attached. Unfortunately, however, the lady whom he married was proud and the most haughty woman ever known. Nothing seemed to please her, and no matter how polite people were to her, she treated them with insult and disdain. Moreover, she had two daughters of her own, whom she brought up to be as proud and idle as herself. In fact, both of them had every unkind and unpleasant trait of their mother. They did not love to study, and they would not learn to work. In short, they were much disliked by everybody who knew them. Of course, when the gentleman married her, he knew nothing about these unpleasant things, for she tried to appear very gentle and well-behaved toward him. But scarcely was the marriage ceremony over before the wife began to show her real temper. Especially did she dislike her husband's little girl, whose sweet and obliging manners made her own daughters appear 1,000 times more hateful and disagreeable, and whose beauty put them to shame. She therefore ordered the child to live in the kitchen, and if she happened to come into the parlor for anything, the woman scolded her roundly till she was out of sight. The little girl was made to work with the servants, wash the dishes and polish the tables and chairs, and it was her place always to scrub the woman's chamber and that of her daughters, and to polish the furniture, which was all of mahogany, finely inlaid with pearls. The beds were of the newest fashion, and in both rooms were looking glasses so long and so broad that the women could see themselves from head to foot. The little girl slept in a sorry garret upon the floor, in a wretched straw bed, which had neither curtains about it nor clothes enough to keep her comfortable. The poor child bore everything without complaint, not daring to say one word to her father, for she saw that he was blind to the faults of his wife, who had him completely in her power. When the little drudge had finished her work, she used to sit in the chimney corner among the ashes and burned out fire, where she got so dusty that the older called her the Cinder Girl. But the younger, who was perhaps not so uncivil and unkind, called her Cinderella, and by this name she came to be known to her family and the neighbors. Nevertheless, Cinderella, dirty and ragged as she was, always appeared much prettier than her sisters, though they were dressed in all their splendor. After they had lived this way for some time, the king's son gave a great ball, to which he invited all the nobles and wealthy people in the country, and among his guests were the two daughters of whom we have been speaking. The king's son had no idea how disagreeable they were, but supposed, as they lived in such splendor, that they must be very lovable and amiable creatures. He did not invite Cinderella, for he had never seen her or heard of her. Nothing could exceed the joy of the two sisters, who began immediately to prepare for the happy day. Every moment of the time was spent in dreaming about such gowns and shoes and headdresses as would be most becoming to them, and make them appear most attractive in the eyes of the king's son. You can imagine how great a trouble and vexation all this was to poor Cinderella, for she it was who ironed and plaited her sister's linen and worked for long hours over their dresses. She heard nothing but the talk of how the two should be dressed. "I," said the older, "shall wear my scarlet velvet with the French trimming." "I," said the younger, "shall wear the same petticoat I had made for the last ball. But to make amends for that, I shall put on my gold muslin train and wear my diamonds in my hair. With these I must certainly look well." They sent to the distant town for the best hairdresser they could hire, and bought many jewels and ornaments of fashionable shapes. On the morning of the ball, they called upon Cinderella to give them her advice about how they should wear their hair and fix their dresses. In spite of her ill treatment, Cinderella gave them the best advice she could, and otherwise assisted them in getting ready for the ball, just as though she had been going too. While her busy fingers were working for them, one of them said, "Would you not like to go to the ball, Cinderella?" Ah, replied the little girl, you are only laughing at me. It is not for such a person as I am to think about going to balls.
You are right, replied the two. Folks would laugh indeed to see Cinderella dancing in the ballroom.
Almost any other girl would have tried to spoil the dresses of the haughty creatures or to make them look as ugly as she could. Cinderella, however, never even thought of such a thing, but did everything she could to make them appear well. For several days the sisters had eaten very little, so great was their joy at the approach of the happy day. They were always before the looking-glass, and many a lace they broke in trying to give themselves fine, slender shapes. At length the much-wished-for hour came. The proud young women stepped into the beautiful carriage, and followed by servants in rich livery, drove toward the palace. Cinderella followed them with her eyes as far as she could, but when they were out of sight, she sat down in her dusty corner and began to cry bitterly. Her godmother, coming in just then, saw her in tears and asked her what was the matter. Poor Cinderella was able to utter scarcely a word, but managed to sob out, I wish. Cinderella's godmother was a fairy and understood at once why the child was crying. You wish, she said, to go to the ball, Cinderella. Is not that the truth? Alas, yes, replied the child, sobbing still more than before. Well, well, be a good girl, said her godmother, and you shall go. Run into the garden and bring me a pumpkin. Cinderella flew like lightning and brought the finest she could lay hold of. Her godmother scooped out the inside, leaving nothing but the rind, and then with the wand which she carried, she tapped the pumpkin gently 3 times. Instantly it became a fine coach, shining all over with gold. She then looked into the mouse trap, where she saw 6 mice, all alive and running about briskly. Lift up the door of the cage very gently, Cinderella, she said. As the mice ran out one by one, the fairy godmother touched them with the wand, and each instantly became a beautiful dappled gray horse. Here, my child, said the godmother, is a coach, and here are horses too, as handsome as your sisters. But what shall we do for a postillion? I will run and see if there is not a rat in the trap. If I can find one, he will do very well for a postillion. Cinderella found the trap, which, much to her joy, contained 3 of the largest rats she had ever seen. The fairy chose the largest and touched him with her wand, and he was instantly turned into a handsome postillion with the finest pair of whiskers you can imagine. Now run again into the garden, she said to Cinderella, and you will find 6 lizards behind the watering pot. Bring them hither. This was no sooner done than with a stroke of the fairy's wand they were changed into 6 footmen clothed in lace livery, who jumped up behind the coach and sat side by side as sedate and dignified as though they had never been anything but trained footmen. Well, my dear, said the fairy godmother, is this not such an equipage as you would like to have to take you to the ball? Are you not delighted with it? Yes, said Cinderella with hesitation. But must I go there in my kitchen rags? In reply, her godmother touched her with the wand, and her rags were instantly changed into the most wonderful gown and clothing, bedecked with more costly jewels than had ever been seen on one person. To all this was added a beautiful pair of glass slippers. Now, said the fairy, set forth for the palace. Go and enjoy yourself. But remember, on no account whatever must you stay at the ball after the clock strikes 12. If you stay but a single moment after that time, your coach will again become a pumpkin, your horses mice, your footmen lizards, and your fine clothes filthy ash-covered rags. Cinderella promised faithfully to do as her godmother wished, and almost wild with joy drove away to the ball. In some way the prince had been informed that a great princess, whom nobody knew, was to come to the ball, and as soon as Cinderella arrived in her carriage, he presented himself at the door, helped her out, and led her into the ballroom. When Cinderella entered the room, a silence fell upon everyone present, and the dancing and music stopped, while everybody gazed in admiration at the remarkable beauty of this unknown princess. How handsome she is, was the whisper which ran around the room. Old as he was, the king himself could not take his eyes from her, and said again and again to the queen, She is certainly the loveliest creature I have seen in a long time.
The ladies did not admire her face so much, but tried to see how her clothes were made, so that if they could find such beautiful material, they might provide themselves with fine dresses, though some of them doubted whether anybody could be found to make them so well. When the king's son led her out to dance, she was the center of still greater admiration, for no one had ever seen such graceful movements. A little later, when the rich supper was spread, many of the guests spent most of their time in watching the wonderful stranger, and as for the prince himself, he gazed at her so constantly that he was not able to eat even a morsel of the delicious foods that he liked best. As it happened, Cinderella was seated between her two sisters, and she took the greatest pains to make herself agreeable, and insisted that in all cases they should be served first. Both were much charmed and elated to think that the strange and beautiful princess paid them so much attention. In fact, their heads were quite turned by her delicate flattery. While they were still conversing, the clock struck the quarter before 12, and Cinderella rose hastily to her feet, and sweeping them all a graceful courtesy, hurried from the room as rapidly as she could. When she got home, she thanked her godmother 1,000 times for the delightful evening she had had, and said that she would give anything she had in the world to be able to go to the ball again the next day, as the prince had invited her. She was just saying this to her godmother when a light rat-a-tat-tat was heard at the door, and Cinderella ran and opened it. "How late you have stayed," said she, yawning and stretching herself and rubbing her eyes as though she had just awakened from sleep, though in truth she had felt no desire to sleep since her sisters left early in the evening. "If you had been at the ball," said the elder sister, "you would not have been asleep. One of the guests was the handsomest, yes, the most beautiful princess I have ever seen, and you have no idea what attentions she paid to us. The prince was very polite to her and gave her oranges and sweetmeats, which she always divided with us." "What was the name of the princess?" asked Cinderella, scarcely able to contain herself with joy. "Nobody was able to find out who she was, and the king's son was extremely grieved and has offered a large reward if anyone can tell him where she came from." Cinderella smiled and said, "How beautiful she must be, and how fortunate you were. Oh, how I wish I could see her for a single moment. My dear sister, please let me take the yellow gown that you wear every day, that I may go to see her." "The idea," said the sister, "lend my clothes to a kitchen wench. Do you think for a minute I would be such a fool? No, no, Miss Forward, you mind your own work in the kitchen and leave us to attend to princes and balls." Cinderella was not much surprised at the answer she received, and indeed was a little relieved, for she had no idea what she could do if the dress were lent to her. On the second day, the sisters appeared again at the ball, and there too was Cinderella, but with even more magnificent clothes than those she had worn the night before. The king's son was always by her side and was continually saying to her the most polite and pleasing things imaginable. The charming young lady was moved by the attention she received, and her heart grew warm at the flattery. In fact, she became so absorbed in the prince and in all the beautiful things that she saw about her that she had entirely forgotten what her godmother had said about her returning at midnight. She was never happier than when the clock began to strike, but as she counted the strokes, 1, 2, 3, and on till she came to 12, her joy changed to terrible alarm. She jumped to her feet and ran out of the room as fleet as a deer. The prince, surprised at her strange behavior, followed and tried to overtake her, but Cinderella's fright made her run much faster than her pursuer, so she soon left him out of sight. But in her great haste, she lost one of her glass slippers and dared not stop to recover it. When the prince came in, he saw the fragile thing, picked it up, and carefully preserved it. Cinderella reached home tired, out of breath, in her old ragged clothes, without either coach or footman, and with nothing left of her magnificence but the mate of the glass slipper she had dropped. In the meantime, the prince had questioned all the guards at his palace gates, asking if any had seen a magnificent princess pass out. The guards replied that no princess had passed the gates, and that they had not seen a single creature, except a ragged little beggar girl that ran through about midnight. Cinderella sat up impatiently, awaiting the return of her sisters, and when they came, she began her questioning again. Was the princess at the ball this evening?
Did they find out who she was, and was she as kind to them as on the night before?
Yes, the princess was there, but at midnight she jumped up and ran so hurriedly from the ballroom that even so she lost one of her glass slippers. She did not stop to pick it up. The prince followed her and was not able to overtake her. He did, however, find the glass slipper, a beautiful little thing, which she had dropped in her haste. All the rest of the night he sat gazing at the slipper, so that all the guests decided he must be very much in love with the princess.
This must have been true, for the next day the prince sent heralds around who proclaimed by sound of trumpet that he would willingly marry the lady whose foot exactly fitted the slipper he had found. The prince's messengers took the slipper and carried it to all the princesses, then to the duchesses, and then to the high ladies of the court, one after another, but without success. Many tried to put on the slipper, but all failed. Finally, it was brought to the house where Cinderella lived, and each of the sisters tried to squeeze her foot into the slipper, but saw that it was quite impossible. Cinderella, who was looking at them all the while, and who knew her slipper, smiled to herself, and when the sisters had failed, she ventured to say, "Please, sir, let me try on the slipper." The sisters laughed scornfully at the idea, but the herald, who had noticed the great beauty of Cinderella in spite of her ragged clothes, said to her, "Certainly you may try on the slipper, for the prince has sworn he will find the owner if it has to be tried on the foot of every lady in the kingdom." So Cinderella seated herself, and when the gentleman tried on the slipper, he found to his own surprise that it fitted her little foot like wax. The two sisters were filled with astonishment, but were even more surprised when they saw Cinderella reach into her pocket, take out the other slipper, and fit it on her other foot. Just at this moment, the fairy godmother came into the room, walked briskly over to Cinderella, and touched her with a wand. In an instant, her ragged clothing was changed to a beautiful dress, which made her appear again the magnificent princess, but even more richly jeweled than ever. The sisters could not fail to see that she was the beautiful princess who had been so kind to them at the ball, and falling at her feet, they asked forgiveness for the insults and the ill treatment they had heaped upon her. Cinderella gave them each a hand, and assisting them to arise, tenderly embraced them one after the other. "I forgive you with all my heart," said Cinderella, "and I hope you will always love me as I shall you." Then she gave her hand to the gentleman in waiting, who conducted her, dressed as she was, into the presence of the prince. He was so overjoyed at finding the beautiful princess again that without delay he asked her to accept his hand. In a few days the marriage ceremony took place, and Cinderella, as forgiving and gentle as she was beautiful, provided her sisters with elegant apartments in the palace, where after a short time both were wedded to rich nobles at the court.